This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too. So the ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Back of the Nest. Match review podcast. www.backofthenest.com.
Hello and welcome to the Back of the Nest Review Pods. I'm your host Mike, in for Chris Hamblin this week, and I'll be joined by a panel of exceptionally happy Palace fans as we look back at a fine 3 points away at the Taxpayers Stadium. We'll be back to discuss Jordan Ayew's knighthood right after this.
Reviews, predictions, comments and rants. Send us your voice clips on WhatsApp 0203 575 1266.
So, yeah, hopefully we're going to provide you with a jubilant pod this episode. We've had a few comments in the past weeks about us being miserable, bringing up the bad points. I don't think there's going to be much chance of that happening this time around. A lot of us predicted either a loss or a point, so we're all happy with the 3 points. All over the moon. Let me ask my panel about how they were feeling yesterday and how they are feeling this morning after their hangovers. And who best to start with than Chris C when we're talking about hangovers? How you doing?
Not too bad, Mike. It was a special day. Had a lot of fun, obviously. Met a West Ham fan on the way who was optimistic on the way there and decided not to meet us for a beer on the way back, unfortunately. But I had the pleasure of meeting a listener called Ben. Hello, Ben. Who, after about 75 minutes, turned to me shyly and said, "Are you from Back of the Nest?" He said, "I've been wondering whether ask that for so long, and I was a bit nervous that I'd look like a dickhead if you weren't." That was nice. Fame at last. And also on the DLR on the way back, I met Jim, the author of the Jeffrey Schlupp song. It was even before the game, it was just fantastic and, you know, special scenes, obviously, which we'll discuss.
Could Jim come up with a better Jordan Ayew song? Could you ask him that, please? Because I think the recycled James McArthur song for Jordan Ayew is poor. I think he deserves more.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that the Ultras are listening to that as well. So maybe rivaling Jim in his penmanship. But I'll have a word with Jim when I see him at the Pawsons in the next week or two.
Good. Right. And myself, I think everyone makes that mistake just once in a while where they rely on someone else to get tickets. And then you leave it too long. And then you end up not having a ticket. So I didn't actually go, and I was pretty gutted. So let me go to Patrick, who obviously didn't go because he's the other side of the Atlantic. You probably knew you weren't going slightly earlier than I did. How was it watching it on the box? Afternoon game for you, I guess, which is rare.
Yeah, early afternoon game. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to me. Been a while since I've been on. It's nice to be back. It was you know, typical Palace nerve-wracking. I mean, it was a... great to get the win against them. I absolutely hate playing and losing to West Ham. So it was nice to get the victory. I thought the team did really well. And again, it's been a quite, I'm not going to lie, I've been very critical of things this season, but I'm quietly very, very happy. Well, actually, not that quietly. Very, very happy at how things are going so far. So, again, great win yesterday. Enjoyed it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's been a fair while since we've done a pod together as well. So let's also say hello to a man who's recovered from the kind of flu that you generally get when you start in university campus. How you doing, DR?
Yeah, I'm better. You're probably going to hear me cough a couple of times. So hopefully I'll put myself on mute before that happens. But
good.
Yeah,
professionalism.
Exactly. It was an interesting week, and Palace topped it up really with that victory, because you said that most people were predicting draws and defeats, but oddly enough, I went for a 2-1 victory when I was on Love Sports. So I don't know, I might have to lie a bit more, because I was actually lying. I didn't mean it to be 2-1, but I just went with it. Maybe I have to go with more of the flow rather than my actual head.
Well, I'd rather listen to you than my own suggestions for bets. I thought I'd win the money back that I lost this weekend on all the other games by backing United to beat Newcastle. And went double or quits, and those monkeys messed me over again, didn't they? Well, anyway, all that's done is put Everton in the bottom three, so, you know, silver linings and all that. We're not going to start with a game discussion straight away. We're going to take a leaf out of the preview pods book and just look at a couple of other things before we get into the game. I'm going to start with a clip from Mark from Miami, another very welcome American listener. Sam, would you do the honors, please?
Hey, what up, guys? Mark from Miami here. We've known for a while that Harris and Blitzer want to sell. I just saw a report that the club has been valued at about £200, and Steve Parrish is willing to dilute his shares for a new owner to come in. If they want to own a big percentage of the club. Has that been confirmed as true? And if so, is that maybe why we haven't made a big signing with the AWB money, and why we haven't gone after a striker or a right or a left back for that matter? Do you think maybe Parrish is waiting for somebody else to come in, buy the team, make it more appealing, and let them make their own signings? If that's the case, we know the sale of teams can be pretty lengthy at times. Does that mean that maybe we're looking at a while without taking care of those positions? Thank you.
I'll start off. Mark, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. You mentioned £200. Even for Palace, that's cheap. But anyway, £200 million, just joking. What I heard was, I believe the rumors are true. Over here, you know, again, Harrison Blitz are from this part of town. I'm in New York. They're from New Jersey area. So it's kind of close. So from what I'm hearing, that is a true rumor. I don't know how far along things are. I know that there has been some things talked about. As far as the money, I did hear that the Juan Bazarca money was going to be spent. I mean, I think Dougie did an interview and talked about looking at right backs. I think we just didn't want to rush out and get someone and get... As Dougie said, he didn't want to be, you know, quoted a huge price and then not get the right players. So that's kind of where we held off on it. And I also think there is an issue with our cash flow, and keeping that money for now, I think, was good for the club. So just addressing those two things. I also think that at this point, I want to give the ownership and Dougie a little bit of credit. We have gone out on the cheap, and everyone was upset at some points during the off-season with us not getting a big money signing. But I would have to say that getting Cahill on a free was great business. Signing Jordan Ayew after he was on loan last year was also great business. And even though we need a right back, and I totally agree we need a right back and probably a left back too, I have to give credit to the fact that the players that we have signed, and I just forgot also James McCarthy coming in, have added value. Camarasa has not had a chance to play yet, but I think when he does, he'll contribute. But I think, and the money that we have spent or not spent has been a good thing. And even though you know, we've had the Wan-Bissaka money and have it still, I think that not spending it all at once might have actually been a great ploy by our ownership. And I know they take a lot of stick, but I do think we have to credit to Dougie for what he has done so far with that money.
I think when you look at this article, I'm not surprised. When the first Bloomberg report came out that said that American owners, they want out, this was in March 2019. Yeah, this was March this year. I was expecting more reports to come out with potential owners coming into the club. But I think the interesting thing here is there's actually two things. One is that Steve Parrish, he wants to stay on, but he's willing to dilute his stake. And long term, it may suggest that he's realised that he cannot do much more in his power to bring this club to the next level. So that's an interesting take. And maybe that's why when you look at the financial figures, it says that the stadium development would bring in extra $24 million every year. And also the club has projected value of $525 million after 3 years and $700 million after 5 years, which shows why it's extremely important to stay in the Premier League. And I think when you look at the summer, yes, we needed a right back and maybe another left back. It didn't shock me massively that we didn't bring them in, because the club clearly wants to stay debt free. It's not like, oh, if we bought a right back, we'd 100% be in debt. But the club are being careful with their finances, and I feel like if this, you know, we're in South London and there's a great catchment area as well. If we expand the stadium even more and grow as a club by bringing new owners, then I'm up for it. But I want it to be done sooner rather than later with the right person, because these the American owners thing, I feel like they just do want out, because this is not the only report. We saw it from Thailand. I can't pronounce the guy's name, but there was someone else interested there. So not the only one, not the first one. I don't think it'll be the last one. But if it does happen, I want it to happen quickly so we move on as a club.
I think Patrick and Dio have mostly covered the points there, Mark. And cheers for getting in touch about it. What I would say is that unlike certain other podcasts or people that claim they're in the know, we're not, and when it comes to finances and business, and nobody outside of the club that claims they are is. You know, Parrish has come on here before and other pods and said, you know, there's only a very small amount of people, even that work for the club, that know the workings of takeovers and plans when it comes to that kind of thing. So it's only conjecture and what the press have said, which, you know, in other stories is turns out to be absolute rubbish. So there's no reason to think that what they write about Palace's finances is any more accurate than what they write about conjecture for signing. So whilst it sounds reasonable and things might change, I would imagine that we're not going to hear about something until you know, it's well underway. You hear about Newcastle being up for sale all the time. It's been sort of 4 and 5 years that it's been discussed now. I wouldn't want Palace to turn into one of those sides where the takeover is all that gets talked about. So hopefully it's something that won't be in the press too much until it's actually way down the avenue being sorted. So let's change tack slightly. And I'm going to talk about a stat that somebody on Twitter sent us today. And this is a site called UREF, and they tagged us in something which I thought was really interesting. They put this morning, Crystal Palace won their fourth Premier League match in a row, and they've used the words under Michael Oliver after their 2-1 victory. Now, Michael Oliver in Palace fans' heads tends to not have a great reputation, so let's talk about the fact, gents, that Michael Oliver is currently our good luck charm. And I think that they were talking about if it was 5 in a row, it'd be some kind of record as well. What does anyone think about that? Just meaningless coincidence, or is Michael Oliver secretly a Palace fan?
If you look at the game yesterday, it's not like Michael Oliver helped us out a lot. I mean, yeah, he made the right calls, but it's not like he favoured us in a lot of calls. I feel like he officiated the game well, and I wouldn't look too much into it. I wouldn't say that, oh, we're winning games when Michael Oliver's ref because he's favouring us with his calls. That didn't happen yesterday. I know we'll talk about it, but it was a penalty, and the VAR decision later on was a correct one. So yeah, I don't think Michael Oliver helped us, but I think both sides got similar treatment from him. So I don't see any point in it, really.
Well, if you'd have listened, I mean, and I only got to hear this because I didn't go to the bloody game, but I got to hear a silver lining was I got to hear Mark Noble after the game. We're going to talk about sour West Ham fans a little bit later, but he was a sour West Ham player, and he said that they were done in the game by a penalty decision that shouldn't have been, and then a VAR decision that shouldn't have been, both of which just seems like a contradiction in terms, being as, you know, the technology proved that they were absolutely the right decision. So I think it's true. In a situation where you've got VAR making decisions, it's sort of limited how much the referee can influence for victories. But, you know, interesting stat. Maybe it'll make us think twice about slagging off Michael Oliver quite as heavily as we usually do. as I put in the tweet when I retweeted it earlier, I've always considered him to be a little bit of a twat, and I'll have a think about that, and I think that maybe I'm just being mean to referees for no reason until he makes a terrible decision next time we have a game with him officiating. So let's get into the game, and let's talk about something that was a real topic of discussion before the game in the week. You know, pundits, people like Robbie Savage talking about it in his column for Sky Sports, how Palace were going to deal with the fact that there was no Luka in the lineup. So, Sam, if you could cue up a clip from Darren, that would be much appreciated.
Afternoon, gents. Darren here. Just seen the team come out, and not too dissimilar to what I thought it could, but would be. It's nice to see Gary get the armband. Hopefully, we can build on last week. A little bit more positive, to be fair, and well, hopefully the positivity pays off a little bit. And let's see what the boys can deliver for us. Got about an hour before kickoff. Let's hope we don't conspire to balls things up massively, and we have a decent day and a good result.
Now, Darren, he was a wise man. He decided that he'd send us a WhatsApp message, as many of you have done. And if you haven't done that so far, you can if you use WhatsApp, and everyone, even my mum, does these days, which is harrowing, absolutely harrowing. When I got my first WhatsApp message from my mum, that's one of those days you never forget in your life. You realise that your parents are capable of actually using the kind of technology that you thought would keep you away from them. But yeah, you can message us on 0203 575 1266. As many people have done, we're getting more and more, even to the point where we've started doing a Your View podcast. If you're interested in listeners and fans comments, Mikey, our other producer, decided that it was a good idea to put them together. They come out on Tuesdays, but usually the evening about 7 o'clock. So if you're interested in those, I believe that one will be in your inbox again this Tuesday. If you're not into WhatsApp, you can always email us, hi@backofthenest, or you can hit us up on all the socials, and we will be reading out plenty of socials throughout this pod. One other thing, if you want to leave us a nice review on iTunes or wherever you find review options, that would be much appreciated. It helps raise the profile of the pods. We have no budget to do that kind of thing, so it's really appreciated. And even if you just tell a friend verbally, old school, it means so much. But yeah, Darren's done that. He's left messages for. Good lad. Let's discuss what he had to say, shall we, gents?
Yeah, okay. So, look, when we look at the lineup, when I first heard that Luka's got 5 yellow cards, the first thing that came into my head after the Norwich win was that, yes, McCarthy's coming in. And that was the case. And I feel like it was the right call from Roy even before the game. Because if you bring in someone like Camaras or Max Meyer in, yes, they are more creative players. They might offer more going forward. But you mess up the balance of the team, the balance that's worked so well in these last couple of games. And that's why I give credit to Roy for bringing in McCarthy. And you can see it during the game where it did work out well. Towards the end, you could see that McCarthy was a bit tired, but I thought he had a very good performance. And he kept, I don't think he'd done exactly what Luka would do, but it was the most similar type of player to Luka that was available. So, right, cool. Another thing was that Andros, he scored last week against Norwich, and there was also a question whether he should start or not. But I think it worked out well once again, Andros coming off the bench. I'm liking what he's offering. I spoke about it, that he needs to do more. And once again, he came on and made an impact. You can see it with the second goal, with Ayew's goal, where that cross into the box, brilliant cross into the box. And I feel like Roy, he's got it right over the last couple of games with his decisions, especially with the lineup. and credit when credit's due.
Before the match, I wasn't happy with the lineup. I'm going to be totally honest. I find Roy to be very predictable. I knew he would start McCarthy for Luka because, as DR just said, it's very much a like-for-like, makes sense. I would have liked him to have been a little bit more creative and put Townsend back in the lineup. But I will give him credit. It worked out perfectly. As McCarthy played really well in doing the job he was asked to do, again, very similar to Luka, how he worked with both McCarthy, he's played with a lot of times in the past with Wigan and with Kiyate. Kiyate and McArthur did a great job of shielding the back four, where McCarthy got a little bit further forward, as was shown by that shot he had on goal. So, fair play. And what I'll say is, and we'll get this later on, hopefully I'll get into it early on, is that Roy has a way of playing that certain players are going to enjoy and fit into. The way IU plays is perfect for Roy's system. The way McCarthy and McArthur play are perfect for his system. And again, and Jeffrey Schlupp also. So again, although I'm critical of Roy, sometimes badly, sometimes not, obviously I got to give him credit because he got it, certainly got it right yesterday and began it right for a lot more of the season than I thought he would.
Definitely credit to Roy for yesterday. I think that's universal. Chris, I want to get your opinion on a couple of things. First of all, my experience of West Ham away since they've moved stadium is it's a very boozy one. Starting Canary Wharf. I mean, it's always a boozy one for you, in fairness, but it's a very boozy one. I know that Terence and Hesketh of the preview pod definitely had a few before the game, to the point where Hesketh WhatsApped us all to say that Terence had thrown half a pint of his wanky IPA all over him before the game. And this was before the game, not after. So I don't know how many limbs were thrown when IU scored the second by a very, very drunk Terence. But so what was the reaction from the slightly inebriated people before the game in the pub and in the stadium? And then do you want to go ahead and answer a tweet from Max Power? I don't know if that's the guy from The Simpsons or the Sunderland player. But he said simply, do we look better in midfield without Luka?
I will answer that. But I'll start by giving the story of my drinking for the day.
Please do.
If you're not a Croydoner, apologies for this, but at the same time, it's worth just saying that there's a Banksy that's been installed at the end of Surrey Street in Croydon. So I took the opportunity to go down and see that, which was fun, Saturday morning. And then I went down to the Art and Craft Bar.
That's risky, isn't it? I mean, didn't they just flog one of his paintings for like £9 million or something? Just stick one in Surrey Street.
It's behind a shop window, and it's a satire on capitalism. So it's okay. Worth seeing.
Okay.
And I tell you what, the area is bustling at the moment. There's actually queues to look at it. So that's really cool. And that meant that I then went on to, initially I went on to the Market Tavern. But my mate Fireman Ian, now former Fireman Ian, because he's retired, had given up on the booze there because he said it tasted like dishwater. So we moved on to Art and Craft Bar, which was superb. Had a number of decent real ales there, including with a nice West Ham fan, a rare West Ham fan who was a nice guy to us on the day, called Dave. And we had a few beers there, then headed onto the ground. Now, let's talk about the reaction during the game. I mean, I was not with the ultras at this game. I was in the lower tier behind the goal, on the right hand side of the fan base. So I was very, very close to a large group of home fans, including some who were really giving it some, especially when we went 1-0 down. So there was one bloke who definitely was kind of rubbing his eyes like crying and pointing downwards. Because clearly we're going down, you know, league table. He hasn't had a look at lately. So we had great fun after the penalty had gone in and then after the winner. I mean, after the penalty had gone in, he was trying to jump through the police lines to have a fight with us. And after the winner went in, he wasn't there. I can't work out what happened, but for some reason he wasn't there. It was amazing. But the other thing to mention about booze is at half time, they were not selling beer. Apparently, there are only two clubs at West Ham that they don't sell beer to, and that's Palace and Chelsea. And Yeah, there were a lot of people singing, "We want beer, we want beer." But we didn't get it until after. But then we got the point, so we're all happy.
I mean, wow. I remember standing quite near the West Ham fans last season, and there's definitely some wankers. In fact, all of this discussion, everything everyone's saying is leading us towards our discussion point in a bit about their fans. But yeah, live, how did it look? It's hard to tell from the TV. How did it look without Luka, and how did it look with the three that we had playing in midfield?
Solid. Exactly what you would expect. I mean, this is one of the reasons why I didn't jump in earlier, was because, you know, DR and Patrick kind of covered the point, which is that, you know, it was utterly, utterly predictable that Roy was going to bring in McCarthy. And he did a job. He did a solid job. I think it's completely predictable that Luka will be back, you know, once he's not suspended. So, but at the same time, whether one of the other midfield players gets dropped, you know, who knows? I mean, I think that the key point is that Roy knows how he wants players to play, and they've all had a chance to bed in, get to know each other. A number of them have obviously already been there a long time and worked that out. Can't see Schlappi getting dropped, but he's often been the one to give way out of the ones we've got. Kouyaté's often given way as well. So who knows? But I can't see Townsend back in the starting 11 for now, which is a shame for me because I still really like him and I think he's been brilliant as an impact player. It looked good in the stadium. We'll talk about the goal later. But yeah, it looked good. It looked like it was working for me.
I think when we talk about Luka, I find that, yes, he hasn't performed up to the standards. I understand that. But let's bring some context into this. I saw the stats. So before today's game, Luka hasn't missed a single minute of Premier League football for 65 games. That's nearly two whole seasons.
Wow, that's a stat and a half. 65 games?
Yep, a single minute. And then look at last season. What happened towards the end of the season with Andros and Maka? Both look absolutely tired from one season. I feel like we do slate Luka a lot, but maybe we need to not drop Luka, but better player management. And it's not only Luka. I feel like it's very, yes, he hasn't performed well, but yeah, we did look a bit better. We need to manage him as well. I don't think we've managed him up to the standards as well, because that is a lot of Premier League football without having rest. And he also had problems with Serbia as well. So we have to look after him. He's our captain. On his day, he's a very good player. But it also doesn't surprise me hugely why he hasn't played up to the standards after seeing that stat, because at the end of the day, he's still human.
Great step, by the way, DR. Regarding Luka being dropped, I actually was one of the people who advocated that. And it's because I just think, as DR just said, he's played a lot the last 2 years. I think his set plays have been lacking. Yesterday, PVA was on set plays and did a tremendous job. Both goals were part, PVA was part of it, you know, setting them up, the free kick that led to the handball, and then the free kick that we was recycled was Townsend across for the goal. So PVA has been very good on set plays, and I think we rely on Luka a lot for that, and I think we can give him a bit of a rest on that. As far as captaincy, I think that's weighed on him a lot too. I think in the beginning he did a really good job. I think as time has gone on, I think he's lost a little bit of his leadership from that standpoint, and I think it shows in his play. I think maybe he's taking a little bit too much responsibility as a captain. But again, he's been a very key player for us. I'm not advocating dropping him. I just think he may be giving him a rest every once in a while, like DR says, 68 games or whatever that was. There's a lot of games to play in a row for any player. People talk about players not being dropped or undroppable. No one is. And as you saw yesterday, McCarthy came in. He was not Luka, but other players stepped up in the roles. Cahill, leadership captain, McCarthy on the field, PV on set play. So at least we know that if he doesn't play, we have some... Well, others that can step up, and that's important, I think.
I've got to say, DR, speak for yourself when you say we've been slagging off Luka. He's still my man crush, and he always will be. Let's talk a little bit about Jimmy Mack, and let's bring in a clip from Rob, who discussed that very Scotsman.
Hey, back in the next, Rob from XRD Goals podcast again. Absolutely buzzing after the West Ham win. Fantastic. Also delighted to see Jeffrey Schlupp get another 90 minutes of football into him. Incredible. But anyway, I'm actually here to eat a fair bit of humble pie. I have to take my slice. I wondered what James McArthur was offering to the team, and my lord, he was absolutely superb yesterday. I thought he was up there with the best players on the park. Did that Luka role absolutely perfectly, so we didn't miss Luka at all. So this is me saying I was wrong about Jimmy Mack. I love him. I love him. Always will have, always will. But I thought he was waning. He certainly isn't. He was absolutely superb.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
That ended very abruptly, sorry. Yes, thank you, Rob. I think that leads us nicely into... I don't know how many of you got to listen to the preview pod. It's always good, and it was great for this game. Hesketh seemed a little bit upset that we'd slagged him off last week. Particularly, he said I'd slagged him off, or Terence accused me of having slagged him off, after he said that he was less than enthused about having three defensive midfielders for the last couple of games. I'm a big fan of that. If I play Championship Manager, I'll make sure I play like a 5-4-1 or a 5-3-1-1. Negativity, definitely. The Tony Pulis 1-0 win is my ideal kind of win. And a lot of people disagree with that. But I wasn't either surprised, like Chris said, or unhappy with the starting 11, other than I'm still a little bit unconvinced by James McCarthy. And possibly still am after that game. But what I did realise, and it's been bothering me since he came to the club, is who he reminds me of. And it's actually, I had a wee for about 3 weeks before I realised how boring they are. And you had the little wee bowling game. It was the little guys with the round heads in Wii, Nintendo Wii. And that's exactly what he looks like. So that, to me, is James McCarthy. I had a listen to him after the game. He came on Palace TV, talked about the game. First of all, I didn't realise he had exactly the same accent as James McArthur. I just assumed he had an Irish accent, but no, he's from Glasgow. Secondly, he seems like a very humble man, just happy to be playing some minutes, which is nice. And I think he did play the role that Roy wanted him to play. I found when Roy said, after the game, that he thought we should be ahead at half time, I couldn't agree with him there. I thought we were lacking a little bit of creativity, and I felt like there wasn't enough of a connection between the midfield three and Wilf and Ayew. And you saw Wilf sort of hesitating to make quick runs because there wasn't the kind of backup from the midfield that he usually would expect. So I know McArthur run himself ragged, but I do wonder a little bit whether McCarthy doesn't quite fit the role entirely of doing the kind of things that Hodgson wants in the defensive end of the pitch, but also getting forward. I'm not sure he's the creative spark that we need, and in certain situations I'm sure he'd be great, but I just wonder if we're a little bit too negative, or whether in fact Kouyaté did the job himself. I don't know what you think.
The interesting thing is, I don't really see us, although I don't love Roy's tactics, I don't really see us playing three defensive midfielders in the classic sense, and I'll tell you what I mean. When you're talking about Kouyaté, Luka and McArthur, yes, Kouyaté and Luka are definitely defensive midfielders, but McArthur really isn't. He's more of a box-to-box midfielder. So when people say he plays three central defensive midfielders, he's not really supposed to do that. He does that in Roy's system. Let's go back to when we had Kabai and Kabai, MacArthur and Luca played together. In that role, Kabai, who was more of an attacking midfielder when he was at Newcastle, became more of a defensive. And then we had Luca, obviously. But then MacArthur, again, was the more box-to-box player with Kabai kind of backing him up. So in that case, again, we didn't really have three defensive midfielders. You go to yesterday and you've got Kouyaté, McCarthy and MacArthur. Now, when MacArthur and McCarthy, sorry, I keep saying that, played together at Wigan, MacArthur was definitely the more attacking of the two, and that's kind of what helped them to win that FA Cup. So MacArthur historically really hasn't been defensive. It's just because the way that Roy plays with the three central players all playing in a little bit of a triangle, and we're not using them as for any kind of width, they've morphed into that, but that's not really how he plays. So like yesterday, you kind of saw McCarthy get a little bit more further forward and attack more, and you know, Kouyaté and Mac are kind of switching off on the Luka role. So it's interesting people talk about defensive midfielders, but I don't really think that's true of those players that we play there. It's just that the way that Roy plays, they all seem very defensive. And if you put a Meyer in there or a Camarasa, then you totally change it, because you automatically think they're going to be more attacking. But I really don't think that it's just because of, again, I think the way Roy says stuff, it just seems that they're defensive, but they're really not supposed to be that way. It just works better for Roy.
Yeah, that's a really good point. We'll take it back to what the preview pod boys said. I don't think any of us are anti-defensive midfielders. It's not the worst thing. You're always going to get critics when you play more defensively than people want, but it's getting results. And that's what we come back to with Roy this season so far. He's got the results. And a lot of that is to do with a certain goalkeeper. Let's start with some comments we've had from Twitter. Stephen Sheffield. Vincente, the man who makes saves that Hennessy couldn't, unfortunately. And Neil Koska just says, the great Vincente. So let's talk a little bit particularly about his first half heroics. I mean, Mark Noble said that the saves that he made, he didn't even know about, which I think is very harsh. You know, there might have been one that was perhaps lucky that it hit him before he knew it was going to hit him. But at the same time, he was in the right place. He didn't let it go through his legs or anything like that. So I think that's very harsh from Noble. And I think it comes from him just being bitter after the game.
I mean, you look at his first half performance. Without him, the game would have been over in the first half, maybe. Honestly, you look at those two, three chances that they had from our silly mistakes. It was not like West Ham cut us up open. It was just defenders just sleeping. And I have to, you know, you have to look at the chances, and he'd saved us. If it wasn't for Gaita, we wouldn't be in the game. And me personally, I feel like I'm more comfortable with him in goal than Wayne Hennessy. Even though when Wayne Hennessy did play good, I gave him credit, which lots of people criticised me for. And I feel like the confidence, I'm not the only one that's confident. I feel like the confidence has gone to the back line as well. They definitely seem more confident. And it's the reason why we've only conceded 8 goals so far this season.
I've got to get involved in this as far as just lauding Guaita. So I'm going to start with a couple of interesting stats, and I want to talk about him as a goalkeeper in general. So he's had 10 clean sheets for Palace in 30 matches, 3 of those this year. Only Pickford and Edison have had kept more clean sheets since March. So he's talking about top goalkeeping. So let's go back again. I'm a long-time Palace fan. I've been a fan of Palace since a gentleman named John Jackson was in goal. So only the old people that listen to this probably even know who he is. And I've always been a firm believer that a really good goalkeeper makes everyone in front of the team better. And I think that our back four, and it's been a chop and change back four for the entire season, has been so much better because of the confidence they have in Guaita. DR just said, the save he made on Haller yesterday was a brilliant save. He probably didn't see it. It's all reactions. And it's just the kind of thing that, you know, you just need a goalkeeper to make. And I think everything about him is fantastic. He reminds me a lot of Nigel Martin. We bought Nigel Martin off that 9-0 loss to Liverpool, and it changed our entire season that year, got us to the FA Cup. So it's to me, a goalkeeper like Guaita is so underrated. And I really think that, you know, a lot of people have picked up on how good he is. And there are times in the past when we've had keepers in the past that just haven't done that kind of a job. I'm not going to start slagging off Hennessy. DR's right. I think Hennessy took a lot of unnecessary flack, but there were times when he would give up some really silly goals. And I'm with him 100%. I can watch a Palace game now in total confidence. And there were times in the past I would honestly would not watch a Palace game. I would refuse to watch it. I was so either going to be either upset or just nervous at watching our goalkeeper. And I think White has really done something that we've needed in the past. He's winning us points. And that's what we need as a goalkeeper.
That's a really good point. I was just about to say two things have helped my heart this season. One is just giving up vaping. And the other one is I'm not worried about defensive or keeping mistakes. The Wolves equaliser shocked me, expecting them to score. Villa, I was happy. I'm not worried about us conceding late on, mainly because we have a really, really solid goalkeeper. And it's been a while since it's felt like that. And it's definitely good for the health, good for the heart. Chris, talk us through how you think the defence was at the weekend. So we had Kelly keeping his place, and it did look, again, that was one of the few advantages I've seen on the TV. It did look like Tompkins was genuinely happy for the side. There's no reason he wouldn't be. But, you know, he's been kept out of the side when last season he was probably the first player on the team sheet. So talk us through the back four, their strengths, and if there was any weaknesses, because there wasn't that many.
Yeah, you've kind of made the point there. There weren't that many. Obviously, that there were moments where West Ham managed to get through and have shots, but ultimately, Greater was absolutely equal to those, you know, and pulled out some absolutely top draw saves. In terms of the back four in front of him, you know, we didn't have the issue with wobbles on the left that we have done in previous weeks. I would, you know, imagine that that can in part be credited to Cahill calling out and, you know, giving guidance on that. Joel Ward didn't really put a foot wrong for me. And, you know, Kelly and Cahill look solid as a unit. Yeah, Kelly has a mistake in him. We know that. But he also gives his absolute all for the team. And, yeah, there were a number of moments where we had cause to, you know, sing his name yesterday. It was really good. And it's one of those things where we were talking last week, I think, about, you know, whether and how Sakho gets back into the team. I mean, I think, as Hambo said then, you know, the answer is obviously yes, he does. But at the same time, it's going to be very hard to justify dropping Kelly when he is performing in the way that he is, which has been really solid. You know, and obviously, there's an element of cover back from midfield that has also been crucial in terms of those, you know, players digging back and, you know, tackling back and making those key interventions. It's just, I mean, it was a positive performance yesterday. There were definitely moments where they could and should have scored, but somehow Greater pulled out the saves. And yeah, it was just one of those classic team performances for me.
If I'm going to play devil's advocate, agree with all of your analysis, gentlemen. And this is only from watching it on TV, because I'm not sure I would have thought the same if I was standing on the ground. If we hadn't have had that lucky, well, that bit of luck with Declan Rice having a moment of madness and then incidentally claiming that he didn't. There was a rumour, I'll have to find who brought it to our attention, but someone tweeted to us saying that Declan Rice had actually spat on Jordan Ayew in anger after the goal. He had a poor game. You could see he was arguing with his teammates saying, oh, you know, I only stuck my arm up to, you know, just to jump. And then one of his teammates was like, yeah, but you stuck your arm up too high. Rob Leonard, thank you for bringing that to our attention. Declan Rice spitting on Ayew, said it is absolutely ignored by everyone, including the commentators. So thanks for bringing that to our attention. But yeah, if he hadn't have had that moment of madness and we had lost 1-0, I think we'd be discussing the fact that PVA was slightly out of position for the goal. He didn't cover his man as he should have done. But as DR said in the past, we're used to that. So I'm not sure it's offering anything new to what we've discussed before. Quick last comment on that, gents, before we move on.
Yeah, quickly. also on that goal, when Haller makes the run for edge of the box, both Cahill first and Kelly pass him off to no one, which is why he's able to score that goal. So again, you're absolutely right, Mike. Had we looked back at it as a 1-0 loss, we would have definitely been upset at the fact that our defense, it's played well, made a terrible lapse on that goal, and it could have cost us. And the fact that it didn't, when we're analyzing their goal, but that goal was preventable from the cross on PVA side to the run by Haller, where both central defenders just lost them.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be repetitive, but I had to come in there. You can't look at PVA and blame PVA purely for that goal. There were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, around, I think, 7 plays in the box, in Palace's box, against just 1-2, against 5 West Ham players. And you look at Haller, there was actually 3 defenders there. I mean, I thought PVA done, yeah, he could have done a bit better, but he done all right in covering his man. But the Haller thing was more of the actual centre-backs just losing their player. And also, when I'm actually looking at the photo, because I screenshot when he scored, McCarthy, I think, is him. And he's just there and he's not picking up Haller. He's just there picking up no one, really. So I wouldn't put too much blame on PVA. Look, I've criticised PVA before, but I'm not going to accept it, Mike. I'm not accepting it this week that we're blaming purely PVA for that goal.
I agree. I blame James McCarthy first and foremost. Very poor play to lose the ball in that area. And the moment that he lost the ball and they made the break, it looked as threatening as anything that they did in the game. So, yeah, can't disagree with that. Let's get on to some full-time analysis. And let's have Thomas from Virginia, please.
Hey, back in the nest. Thomas from Virginia here. Wow, what a match. Second half, best I can say for us is we looked like we wanted to fold. We wanted to let another goal get by us. I can't say enough for VAR. I mean, wow, by the slightest of margins, getting that goal in. And Jordan Ayew just being Johnny on the spot with the shot. That was great. Couldn't be happier. I know we're coming into a tough run of games now with Man City next and Arsenal and all the other teams who are in the top 6. But hey, let's be real here. We know it's not long-lived, but we're in the top 4 right now. So let's enjoy it while it lasts. Up the Palace.
Unfortunately, that was recorded before the time of this pod. We are no longer fourth. But the point was there. And I do like the quote, let's be real now. So, 3 people I'd like to bring up, and we'll discuss them all at once. Hambo in his absence, and what's happened to Hambo this week is that he was enjoying himself after the West Ham game yesterday. Took himself to his local Aldi. He bought 14 cans of Fenton's gin and diet tonic. He consumed them by himself in Reading, and he's currently sleeping that off. So, we're Hambo list this week, but he did leave us a message about Wilf, and he said, watching the full game back, I thought Wilf was excellent at times and obviously occupied multiple players. Anderson had to track back a lot in particular. Yes, and I think it was another situation where Wilf meant that there was plenty of space for the other players. I was actually watching it with my dad, who's not a Palace fan, and he was kept bringing up the fact that Wilf seemed to be at walking pace rather than running down the pitch, but it seemed to me that it was because he was making sure that he occupied at least a couple of West Ham's players. We'll talk about Andros coming on, again setting up a goal. It's beginning to me to look like he is the kind of super sub that we're looking for. Hodgson's not going to change a winning side, especially not a double winning side, so I can't see, even if Andros thought he was in the form of his life, which he knows he's not. Can't see him getting into the starting 11, but very happy him coming on and killing off some tired legs in the opposition. And then let's talk about the greatest of all time, Jordan Ayew. A couple of things. Palace Ash pointed out from the end of the highlights on Palace TV, he's injured. He's got an ice pack on his knee. So hopefully that's a short-lived problem. 3 goals this season already, so more than Benteke scored since the start of last season, and only 1 less than since the start of the 17-18 season. So, I mean, they've got a bad word to say about Jordan Ayew, have they really, let's be honest. those three gonna. This is gonna be a good few minutes of positivity, isn't it, lads? Come on, give me some pure positivity.
Yeah, I mean, let's go back to Andros and comments there. I feel like, yeah, last week he scored a goal. This week he got the assist. I mean, if you're Andros, wouldn't you knock on your manager's door and be like, look, I'm doing all I can, and I think I should start? Because you look at his performances, they have improved. And in the start of the season, when he did get dropped, it was warranted as well. But now he does have a point. He has a case that he could say that, look, I'm doing better now. But the thing is, I understand what you're saying though, Mike. It's the fact that there's Jeffrey Schlupp in the equation here. And is Roy really going to drop Jeffrey Schlupp? I mean, Roy's got a decision to make over the next couple of weeks. Because if Andros gets involved with goals, as he has done over the last two games, and when he has come on, he's at least 8 out of 10 because he got another brilliant assist against West Ham. You have to look at performances rather than the individuals that you like, because I said it last week on the pod with Martin Kelly. When Sacco comes back, if Martin Kelly's still playing as he is, then you don't drop him for Sacco. That sends the wrong message. And I feel like there's a similar message here where, yes, you do like Schlupp. We've seen it with your team selections. But if Andros is performing up to the standards over the next couple of weeks, then you might have to drop Jeffrey Schlupp for Andros Townsend.
Yeah, I'm not a big supporter of the feeling that you can't change a winning side, but I do understand what it is and that it happens. As far as the lineup concerned, things have a way of working themselves out. Mike, I didn't know about the potential injury to Ayew, but if that happens or someone gets injured during the break, he's going to change that winning lineup. He'll have no choice. I don't think there's any doubt that McCarthy will be dropped for Luka. You've got to put your captain back into the lineup, because otherwise, Diarki's mentioning, is that it just sends the wrong message. So there will be at least one change for the Man City game. Like the way Andros is a super sub, but I'd like him to be in the lineup. I have no issue with Jeffrey Schlupp. I think Jeffrey Schlupp is very underrated, but I do understand what people see when they say that, you know, and a handball has an issue with his work rate and his effort. Sometimes he doesn't look like he's putting the effort to bust back to defend. I like the fact he's very versatile and that he drives us forward. I think on a team like Palace, when you have a player like Wilf really owning Ayew when he's holding the ball up, you need players to hold the ball up and drive it forward. And Schlupp does that. And again, he's just Roy's player. But I want to give a quick mention to Wilf Zaha. Yesterday, he was brilliant. He gave us an outlet at all times. He occupied various players. But what I'd like to point out is that his defensive work in the last few weeks has been outstanding. I think he's really, really helped Joe Ward become a better defender because he's helping on that right side. I think Ayew's done a tremendous job, and I think we're defending so much better from the front that it's really taking a lot of pressure off both our midfield and our defenders. So I think Wilf deserves a lot of credit for the improvement we've shown as a team in our wind and also in our defensive play.
Looking forward and building on the points that both Patrick and DR have made, I think, you know, we need to look forward to the City game and work out what it is we're trying to achieve here. City have demonstrated in recent games that they are vulnerable, and we need to look at exactly why and how that is. Now, at least one of those games was earlier today at the time of recording, which I haven't seen. So I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if others have had the chance to watch the game against Wolves and assess how it is that Wolves were able to beat City. But that's something that will be key to how we set up for these games. I mean, let's put that in perspective. If we were to beat City in that game, as far as I can see, mathematically, you know, depending on other results, we could go second, which is, yeah, hilarious and also brilliant. And we've got to look at, you know, how is it we're going to set up? It may well be that we go with the Roy thing. So obviously we bring Luka back. I absolutely support that. But whether it is that Townsend comes back in or whether you're looking at playing those versatile players who, you know, can, as Hesketh said previously, form a defensive three in midfield as need be. You know, against City, you have to do what you have to do. So let's see what that plan is and let's see what players are available. But If it means we have to be either pressing really high and giving them a game or defending really well, I don't know what the answer is. But, you know, I trust Roy to make the right choice. but I'd be interested to see what others think.
Well, before we get into discussing beating Man City and a surefire Champions League place, let's have a listen to a clip from Ebo and then a clip questioning Hambo from one Rory.
Hi, it's Ebo. So post-match, fantastic result, 2-1, fantastic. Just brilliant to get a win at that stadium. It's been a little while coming. And it was good. I mean, it was great to have that winning goal. I mean, although it took an age to get it corroborated by VAR, God, that was great. And I was in a pub that had loads of West Ham fans in it, and he's in the Charlton area, really. And it was just great to be one of about four people that walked out of there smiling. So, my man of the match, I think, was probably Gator. I think he kept us in it first half. Still a bit disappointed with the lack of effort from the midfield three, sort of when we do get the ball and attack, very little going forward. But, I don't know. I mean, it was a good result. And you know, we've got an international break coming up this time. I think I'm right in saying that this time. And then we've got quite a rough run of games coming up, which I'm hopeful we can. I'll be happy if we got 3 points out of the next four or five games. Anyway, brilliant. Like I say, man of the match Gator for me. It would have just been nice to see a little bit more effort going forward when we do get the ball from MacArthur or Coyote. But got to be happy with that, haven't you? Come on, you Eagles.
Oh my God, guys, seriously, you're still talking about Jeffrey Schlupp. Like, we criticise Roy for being too rigid and too well drilled, and I agree, Hambo, man for man, a different set of management, a different set of staff, you'd get someone else in there, I get it, but it's not a different set of management, it's not a different gaffer in charge, and Jeffrey Schlupp actually offers a bit of versatility during the game, so come on, that means that Roy can be more flexible, he can tweak, he can, you know, if we need to drop, he can do more than one aspect of midfield or left wing or left back or even further up the pitch. You know, there's a reason why we've got him on the pitch. It's because he can mould in without necessarily changing position on paper.
So, Rory there, fairly up for defending Jeffrey Schlupp. I would say today, I don't think we've said a word against him. I mean, Hambo's not here, but I would say that it's putting words into our mouth a little bit that we continually slag him off. He might be a point of discussion, but we tend to reflect what people are talking about on Twitter. And I will combat that. Nothing that I necessarily say that we agree with, but from Warren Guest on Twitter, for you Schlupp lovers, he received the ball 33 times yesterday and gave it back to the person who passed it to him 16 times. 10 times he gave it to the defence, 4 times it was part of a triangle, and 3 times it went forward. He made just one tackle in the second half and lost it. I don't know how truthful any of that is, but that's both ends of the spectrum in terms of Jeffrey Schlupp. I think he played pretty well, personally. I think everyone played their part yesterday. There's no way we'd have won otherwise because, let's not take it away from West Ham. They are a very good side. They've got some excellent players. And I think that takes us on to the last topic that we need to discuss today, the entitlement of West Ham players. And this sort of led on from the preview pod. But let's start with a tweet that Daniel Schilling sent to us when we asked what people want to talk about. He said, "Why are West Ham fans such sour, miserable and I mean, all week, expectations were from pundits that they were going to win. Everything I read had them winning by at least a goal. 3-0, I heard on Alan Brazil's morning show on TalkSport. Terence and the crew on the preview pod were listening to the Stop Hammer Time pod. They were talking about from the posh guys, and they said that Palace were nothing to be scared of. So what is it about us and about West Ham fans that make it seem like it's such a foregone conclusion? It does seem to me that despite the fact when I was growing up, West Ham were a yo-yo team. They have a sense that they're a huge club. I mean, okay, they get 60,000 people along. You know, my favourite band in the world is Iron Maiden, and they're massive West Ham fans. And, you know, I see them wearing West Ham shirts on stage and stuff. So, you know, in certain ways, West Ham infiltrate popular culture in a way that the Palace don't. But they might have a decent side, but they were only, I think, a point ahead of us before the game. So I don't know what it is about them that makes them think that... they just have this God-given right to get 3 points against us. I know we haven't had a great record against them recently, but you know, if you take it back the last 15 years, we've beaten them plenty of times, not least a certain Neil Shipley goal.
Look, with West Ham, it's not only this game. It's been like this for years now. There's just clubs that just don't like us. And it's just simple as that. They don't like us because of incidents that's happened. They don't like us because we've got Wilfried Zaha and they don't like him. Because when you look at West Ham fans and their comments after the game, most of them are like, oh, Wilfried Zaha's going to leave you anyways, and then you're going to get relegated. It's just, no, it's a hatred towards Zaha, and that just connects to us. I don't think there's anything bigger than that. I mean, some of the comments after the game, I guess, was only from frustration, because there were some very stupid comments out there, even from West Ham players themselves. But I think it's just simple as they don't like our players, so they don't like us.
I think there's a lot of truth in that. The extra interesting thing, and Cy Pizzi of this parish pointed out a tweet from a Tom Barkley, and he said, Roy Hodgson spent $6 million this summer, $9.5 million last summer. Now up to fourth, as I say, out of date because we're sixth, for what has been an amazing 2019 points-wise. The man is a master at managing Premier League sides on shoestring budgets and doesn't get enough credit. So there is a sense, you know, we got a lot of slagging in the media about how we had a terrible transfer window in the summer. And I think everyone, including ourselves, was thinking it probably wasn't quite as strong a squad as we had last season, which didn't seem like quite as strong a squad as the season before. So... for us to be doing well, you know, I think that there's teams like West Ham that are scratching their heads. I think the difference with West Ham is that, you know, they've had a pretty decent start as well. There's other sides doing much worse than them. Everton, for example, didn't get 3 points against us, and now they're in the relegation zone. So let's have a quick discussion before we end about what it is Hodgson's done right recently. Certainly playing to the kind of game plan that he enjoys is certainly something we've discussed here. You know, James McCarthy, the middle three, that kind of stuff. Patrick mentioned earlier on WhatsApp, does Dougie get enough credit for his recruitment on a shoestring budget? So what is it, just that we've played 8 games and maybe we haven't played enough to see how this season transpires? Or are people's hopes up that, you know, we are really looking for, you know, those Europa places chasing this season and not worrying about relegation?
Well, for me, it's been a little bit of the type of teams we've played so far. We've been lucky enough in these first 8 matches to really come across maybe 3 or 4 decent sides, Tottenham probably being the best. I think the next 5 games are going to really tell where we are. You know, you talk about City, Leicester, Liverpool, Arsenal, Chelsea. Those matches for me are going to really show where we are. I think Roy, again, I've not been his biggest supporter, but I think you have to give him credit for what he's done. The amount of points we have, the position is, to me, like I said, I said this way before we started the show, I think the Premier League is really down a lot this year. I think you take out Liverpool, who are going to run away with the title. City are down because of injuries to their centre-halves, and just I think their focus is going to be on Champions League this year. And United are just way off of it. Everton are way off of it. Tottenham are way off of it. Just so many sides, United, there's so many sides that you would expect at Arsenal, who won today. But again, I would say that they're not firing on all cylinders. I think that where it's a type of year where, like, it's not going to be a Leicester, obviously, where Leicester won the league when other teams were down. But Palace can seriously stay at least in the top 10 because of the fact that there's just a disparity for me in top to bottom as far as the league. It's very, very top heavy. And I'm talking about one particular club in Liverpool. So, tremendous credit to him. He's done a great job, Hodgson, with what he's done. The players have bought into his system. Players like Wilf, who may not have started off great when he wanted to leave, have really just bought right back into it. He's done a great job, like I said, with Ayew, with Schlupp, Ward stepped up. PVA, again, not the greatest defender, but done a great job going forward and played well. Guaita has been great. You can go across the side. I mean, he's just done a good job. And I think this is the type of side that he wants. He doesn't want to have superstars necessarily. He wants to have a low-budget side, an overachieving side. We've seen it in the past. He's done a great job at Fulham, etc. He went to a big club at Liverpool. It didn't work out. And credit to the manager. He's done a great job. I just hope that, you know, we can keep it up because, again, of a Palace supporter who wouldn't want to be, you know, a top six side.
Conversely, the only thing I would say is I'm not sure there's too many whipping boys in the league this season. I feel like everyone other than Liverpool and maybe Man City could beat each other on their day. So I wonder, if you have a bit of bad luck for a few games, things can change. And as you say, we've got a tough old running coming up, but we've already got the points on the board. And I would hazard a guess that this is the best start since the FA Cup final season, although I might be wrong on that. So let us just have a tongue-in-cheek tweet from Sam, Edgar TP on Twitter. We've dropped from fourth to sixth in less than 24 hours. Is it time to sack Roy Hodgson?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Just joking.
Yeah, good point, Sam. Good point, Sam. Let's have one more clip before we have a final thought from everyone from the immutable Lord Zonka.
Eagles, wow, we did a job. West Ham might feel like they got mugged. This is Lord Zonka. So happy. Gary Cahill, what a signing. How Arsenal took Luiz over Gary Cahill. I'm sure if Arsenal had approached Cahill, he would have gone for Arsenal. You couldn't blame him. They are a better team, obviously they are. But we've got him, and he was great. We've got such a great, I wish we had as many great strikers as we've got central defenders. And AU was a revelation. He's not a natural great goal scorer, but he worked his socks off today and he got a goal. Three goals. So he's prolific by Crystal Palace standards. I'm so happy for us.
So yeah, we couldn't go an episode without bringing you the thoughts of Lord Zonka. What a man he is. We should have a whole episode of just Lord Zonka chatting shit. I think that would be better than listening to us. Any last thoughts, gentlemen, before we wrap it up?
We've got hard. You mentioned it a couple of minutes ago. Our next six games is very, very difficult. We've got City at home, Arsenal away, Leicester City at home, Chelsea away, Liverpool at home. I mean, the good thing is that we've started the season off well. The win at West Ham was massive. And I feel like going into this game, there's not much pressure. But next game, I know the preview lot will discuss it more in detail. But City, if we play to our strengths and, you know, we talked about their injuries, it could be a good start. But I have no real expectation going into these games. Hopefully we get a draw out some, get a couple of points. But good start to the season and let's hope we continue it.
And let's not forget that none of those teams have one Jordan Pierre Ayew in their starting 11. The greatest of all time. Right, well, thank you very much for listening. We will be back in 2 weeks' time after the international break. Before that, you've got Love Sport continuing. You've got the Your View pods, and obviously you've got the preview with Terence and the boys. So still plenty from us. It's getting to the point where you're going to hear a pod from us every day and you'll be sick to death of us. Thank you very much for listening as ever, and do enjoy your week of No Palace.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates are round. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavourless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.